Derek Cope, driving the race of his career, stays in second place. The Spanaway Washington campaigner moves in again on number three, Earnhardt.
Derek Cope has never finished better than sixth place in any of his racing starts. This will be his first top five finish. And look at him putting the pressure on Earnhardt.
This is a production of Dirty Mo Media. Hello, my name is Rick Houston, and this is a glorious, white-knuckled, God-fearing, spun-out, and half-turned-over racing story. One of the things that I've loved most about being a journalist for the last 30 years is digging into a story that fans would find familiar, but looking for a fresh angle, a side of the story that most wouldn't already know. Take, for instance, the 1990 Daytona 500.
Settling down for a start, 32nd annual 500, as 94,000 in the grandstand rise to send them off with a Daytona ovation.
If you've followed the sport for any time at all, you're more than likely up to speed on that event's bullet points. Dale Earnhardt dominated the race, and when I say he was strong that day, he was strong.
And Earnhardt still shows the dominance that he's shown here all day long.
Of car number three, Earnhardt goes into first.
He started second, led eight times for a total of 155 of the event's 200 laps, and at times held leads of nearly 30 seconds over second place.
Earnhardt has separated himself as quickly as possible from the remainder of the field.
Still, Dale Earnhardt, to that point in his career, had never won a Daytona 500. He'd come close, but somehow, someway, the ultimate prize in the sport's biggest event had always eluded him. The 1990 Daytona 500 was the closest he had ever come to winning that event, and, in the final mile or so, would also become his greatest heartbreak. As the final lap began, he was on fresher tires than second place Derek Cope.
The white flag coming down to Dale Earnhardt.
One lap to go. Does anybody have anything left?
And experience-wise, there was essentially no comparison between the two drivers. Earnhardt was a three-time champion and had won 39 races as the 1990 season got underway, while Cope had never run a full schedule and had zero top five finishes to his credit. He'd even failed to qualify for the Daytona 500 the year before, in 1989. On MRN, Barney Hall, then Joe Moore, and finally Alan Bestwick had the call as NASCAR flagman Harold Kinder waved the white flag.
White flag for Dale Earnhardt as he zips across the line just one car length ahead with three cars chasing him off into turn one.
The black and silver colors of the Goodrich Chevrolet leading the way as he has all day, but Derek Cope works on him going back into turn one for the final time. Cope drifts up the banking.
Labonte looking for help from Bill Elliott. They still run single file halfway down the back straightaway, half a lap to go. Still Earnhardt now stretching his lead by another car length over Cope. Labonte can't do anything with Cope either.
Suddenly, Bestwick's voice shot up several octaves. Something had happened to Earnhardt's car as he hurtled into turn three. As improbable as it seemed, Derek Cope turned his car to the left to pass Dale Earnhardt for the lead.
Earnhardt's car blows up! Earnhardt blows a tire in turn number three!
Derek Cope down to the inside, Terry Labonte second as Dale Earnhardt slides back into the fourth position. Off the corner, it's Derek Cope!
Depending on whether or not you were a Dale Earnhardt fan, those are the high or low points when it comes to the 1990 Daytona 500. Earnhardt and certainly Derek Cope were asked many times about the event. But what other perspectives are there out there that might shed new light on such a well-known day in NASCAR history? Buddy Parrott is a master storyteller, and he just so happened to be Cope's Whitcomb Racing crew chief that fateful day.
Here's Buddy Parrott. I've been attacked by him. I'm going to... Hey, you told me, you said, you know when to hold them and know when to fold them, right? Is that what you said?
In 1990, Parrott had been a fixture on the Winston Cup circuit for 20 years or so. Incredibly, Parrott had worked with Earnhardt during his dirt racing days with Robert G. and had a stormy run with Diegard Racing and driver Darrell Waltrip in the late 1970s through the midway point of the 1980 season.
Waltrip still in command, leads him off into the first corner. Buddy Baker rides second.
He had served as Richard Petty's crew chief in 1984 and was calling the shots in the 43 team's pits the day the King won the 200th and final race of his immortal NASCAR career.
You are going to see a checkered flag for car number 43. Richard Petty has won the 200th race of his incomparable Grand National Stock Car Racing career.
So yeah, Buddy Parrott had been around the block a few times by the time the 1990 Daytona 500 rolled around. Parrott joined Wickham Racing in 1989 and directed Cope to four top 10 finishes that season. The results were okay, but not exactly the kind that would have caused anyone outside the faithful few within their team to believe that a win in the next year's Daytona 500 would be possible. Yet that's exactly what Parrott was expecting headed into Daytona's annual Speed Weeks that year. First of all, he had pleaded with top-notch engine builder Keith Dorton to provide a power plant for the 500.
We expected to win the race.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. We had a lot built in that car, okay? Harry used to say that a lot, so we got a lot built in that car, you know. But we had an engine that was built by Randy Dorton, who got killed on the airplane going to Martinsville, Virginia, was the head engine guy. Well, see, a lot of people didn't know that Randy had a brother named Keith Dorton. Keith Dorton was a genius. And I think Keith Dorton still is doing motor stuff. I don't know, but Keith had worked a program with Harry Hyde back in the day with the tubes and the manifold and things. And we were fortunate enough to get one of those motors. Okay? You know how I was fortunate enough? I got my car and went down there and begged him, please build me a motor for Daytona.
The car Cope drove that day was built by Robert G. Jr., and Parrott had massaged it as much as he possibly could. To hear Parrott tell the story, it brings to mind the classic scene from the movie Days of Thunder, where crew chief Harry Hogg talks quietly and lovingly to the car that he's building for driver Cole Trickle. I'll get you primed, painted, and weighed, and you'll be ready to go out on that racetrack. Hear me? You're going to be perfect.
We had a great car. The car was built by Robert G. Jr. in a little shop over there that's off of 29. I think they finally mowed that shop and for the interstate or interchange and all that. But spent a lot of hours, a lot of intriguing ingenuity.
Now we're getting somewhere.
built that car, but it was legal. It was legal. Everything was legal to pass the templates and did a whole deal, but it was a fast car.
When teams got to Daytona and unloaded, Parrott was satisfied with the team's speed. He also had some important instructions for Cope, his young protege.
When we got to Daytona, I told Derek. Derek and I had a conversation. I said, every time that three car goes out, I said, I want you behind him. I want you to learn what you can learn from him. And if he pulls down pit road and he gets out of his car and goes to the men's room, I want you to follow him in there. I want you to draft him right in there to find out what's going on, okay? He laughed. But that's the truth. When Dale went out, we were right there with him. But we had a fast car.
Cope in the middle, Earnhardt, and here comes Elliott with him. Now to the bottom of the racetrack. Car number three is making his move. Low side, Earnhardt busting through.
Dale Earnhardt victorious. Elliott's in second. Jimmy Spencer third. Parsons fourth. Bobby Hillen with a good run up to fifth spot. Derek Cope finishing in sixth.
Cope finished sixth in the second twin 125-mile qualifying race, and even that was a surprise to most onlookers. The event was won by Earnhardt, the first of 10 consecutive qualifying races he would capture at Daytona throughout the entire decade of the 1990s. Once the main event started on Sunday, February 18th, Jeff Bodine led the first lap, but after that, Earnhardt was out front for the next 26. The Dale Earnhardt Show was on. Derek Cope, however, didn't just appear out of nowhere on the last lap to somehow miraculously be in position to take advantage of Dale Earnhardt's misfortune. He ran well that day and amongst the rest of the leaders, and Parrott had little to no mercy on his driver. When Cope complained of the car being loose, Parrott made it looser during a late race pit stop. Why? Again, it was as if he was Harry Hogg in Days of Thunder. When the rear end's loose, the car's fast. Loose is fast and on the edge of out of control.
Derek Cope was not, well, bless his heart. I put him to the extreme pressure on the last pit stop. He was screaming, loose, loose, I'm loose, I'm loose. So we went out, knocked about 4 degrees, 5 degrees of spoiler right of him. Out of it. Not in it, but out of it.
Jeff Bodine spun in turn one on lap 192. And during the caution that came about as a result, Earnhardt headed down pit road for fresh tires, while Parrott had Cope stay on the track. Bobby Hillen didn't pit either, and lined up second on the restart, just 5 laps away from the checkered flag. Jeff Bodine had long been a thorn in Dale Earnhardt's side, and he recovered quickly from his late race spin. Of all people, Bodine pushed Earnhardt back to the top of the leaderboard by the time the field reached turn three. This was Dale Earnhardt's race to win or lose. Nevertheless, Buddy Parrott was content with his decision to keep Cope on the track.
The best position for us to have been in was behind Dale, and knew that was going to happen. At the end of the race, you know, it was nose to tail going down the backstretch, or we were in position, let's just say that. I don't know how close we were because I don't remember seeing it, but I know that we were in second place. Let's say that. Second place would have been like winning the race to us.
Cope's pit stall was located right next to Dale Earnhardt's. From his vantage point on pit road, Parrott had no way of seeing for himself what was taking place on the backstretch and going into turn three. Suddenly, something got Parrott's attention.
Well, my first indication, of course, when the grandstands exploded, you know, and when you can hear the roar of the crowd over the roar of the engines, then you know you're doing something.
Something big had happened, but what? His first thought was this.
So my first indication was he finally drafted up to him, and knowing Cope, it hadn't been in that position before, and either a block was going to happen and Dale pulled down. Well, Cope was already running wide open, and he wasn't going to let off, and boom, there's a wreck. But it didn't happen that way, obviously.
Parrott had also given Cope some pretty cryptic instructions. However you have to do it, just win the race.
I'd already told Cope. I didn't tell him. We planned our strategy. I want you to win this race, whatever it takes. Because that three car would do the same thing, whatever it took.
Did that include laying a bumper to the Intimidator himself? In a word, yes. In Buddy Parrott's world, you live by the bumper and you lose by the bumper.
That was a given back then. You know, the bumper rule to win the race on the last. And Dale knew it. Everybody knew it, you know, and they're still doing it. Makes for exciting racing.
Parrott had been around the sport long enough to understand that if Cope had given Earnhardt a big enough bump to cost him a shot at winning the Daytona 500, then feelings in the Earnhardt pit immediately to his left were going to be raw. Raw enough, in fact, to fight. I couldn't help but laugh as Parrott told the story.
My next thought was to prepare the crew. See, there was going to be a big preparation of crew because somebody's going to get their ass whooped. I'm going to tell you, there was an ass whipping coming, and not by Dale. I saved his little fanny many a times. My deal was that I was going to take chocolate, okay? Because chocolate was the biggest and the ugliest. Okay. I said, y'all give me chocolate. When he comes up here, y'all just let me have chocolate and y'all take the rest of them. Because chocolate's going to try to do all the damage. But it didn't happen that way. And of course, chocolate and them didn't come. And the rest is history.
As it turned out, Cope hadn't needed to lay a fender to Earnhardt. Instead, Earnhardt cut a right rear tire after running over a piece of debris on the backstretch that final time around under speed. Cope flashed under Kinder's checkered flag, the winner of the 1990 Daytona 500.
His crew chief, Buddy Parrott, elected to keep him out on that caution period to take the lead in the race. Earnhardt came in and got four tires, and nonetheless, Cope's been able to come up and race with him.
Number three, Earnhardt in front, and Derek Cope driving the race of his career, stays in second place. The Spanaway Washington campaigner moves in again on number three, Earnhardt.
Derek Cope has never finished better than sixth place in any of his racing starts. This will be his first top five finish. And look at him putting the pressure on Earnhardt.
Four-car shootout to decide it all. Dale Earnhardt.
Here comes Duke Cope down on the inside. Oh, Earnhardt has
Earnhardt
problem.
Earnhardt slopping back. Something is amiss. Here comes the field driving for the finish. And on the outside in his car, number 10, Derek Cope. Something amiss on the Earnhardt car. Coming to the line, it's Labonte pulling up, and an amazing finish. The Whitcomb Racing Team has won it.
To this day, it remains one of the biggest upsets in NASCAR history. MRN pit reporter Dick Brooks caught up with Parrott as the rest of the Whitcomb Racing team celebrated its victory all around them.
Here's Buddy Parrott. I done been attacked by him. I'm getting... Hey, you told me, you said, you know when to hold them and know when to fold them, right? Is that what you said?
The old song says, you know, Kenny Rogers, and Dick walked up to me and said, what are you going to do? I said, well, why didn't you change tires? I said, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them. I tell you, though, my hat's off to Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company today, and they had a wonderful tire. I can't wait to go to Atlanta and run this tire. The Goodyear guy said the tire worked better at Atlanta, and we're looking forward to that. But again, Keith Thornton, I know you're glued to that radio and TV, and he did a great job, a wonderful job, automotive specialist out of Concord, North Carolina.
Well, he sure did, and I'm sure glad for you guys, I tell you. Buddy's been around a long time. This is a mess down here, guys.
Dale Earnhardt finally won the Daytona 500 in 1998, while Derek Cope collected one more win in his Winston Cup career later in 1990 at Dover. There's a word that many associate with Cope's Daytona 500 win, and that word is this: fluke. To Buddy Parrott, the word is of little consequence. Cope won the race, and that was that. If Earnhardt hadn't run over the piece of debris, who knows what might have happened.
Let me just say this. Regardless of what people say, they can't take the win away. That rhymes, okay? But as I told you earlier in this broadcast, our strategy was go out, run on his bumper as close as you can, learn as much as you can, and everything's going to be okay. And if it really had come to the last lap, the last corner, I really think Cope could have gotten to him, Cope would have spun him. Simple deal. But then all hell would have broke loose, okay?
Thank you so much for joining us in this episode, and I'll be back soon with another glorious white-knuckle, God-fearing, spun-out, and half-turned-over racing story. Have an idea for a glorious racing story? Share it with us by emailing glorious@dirtymomedia.com.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Dirty Mo.